You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it for us until September, but thankfully we've got a whole program, a full 3 hours chock full of content coming to you live tonight, and then we'll see you in September after this evening's show, which promises to be another good one. But thankfully for you, ladies and gentlemen, and for us as well, we are a program for all seasons, are we not, Keith Alexander? It doesn't matter if it's spring, summer, winter, or fall. We're always here. We're always ready to deliver.
Yeah, time-proof and weather-proof.
Well, let me tell you what we've got coming up tonight. I was actually so entranced by this piece of correspondence we received today that I failed to hear Mr. Producer's cue. That's why the music was late. I was reading this, and I heard him, but I just couldn't get it together. And I'll tell you what I was reading in just a moment. But first, let me tell you what's coming up tonight. Coming up tonight, we're going to mix the old and the new, one of our program mainstays, with a first-time guest making his debut appearance. Yes, you're going to hear from the incomparable Sam Dixon. He's going to be on this evening to discuss a variety of topics, always a fan favorite. Anytime Sam's on the broadcast, you just can't afford to miss it. And a little bit later tonight, in the third hour, you're going to have a special treat waiting for you when the young Venezuelan journalist Jose Nino makes his debut appearance on TPC, and we put his links up at thepoliticalcesspool.org so you can better familiarize yourself with Jose's work. And I had the opportunity to sit down with him on his podcast, El Nino Speaks, back in late June, early July, and we had talked about doing a reciprocal appearance ever since, and tonight's going to be that night. So I really think you're going to like what you hear from Jose. Well, I'll go ahead and read his bio for you. How many people of that particular heritage end on this side of the fence? Perhaps more than you know. We're going to ask him about that. But Jose Nino is a patriotic Hispanic American who defends the historic American nation from the constant barrage of blood libel coming from the anti-white left. So when I asked him for his bio, that's what he sent in. That's about as stout-hearted as it comes, Keith. So we'll hear Jose's story in the third hour, and I will tell
you, El Nino will blow in.
Had a great time talking to him on his podcast. He reached out, and that's how we first got connected, and we posted that up at thepoliticalcesspool.org midsummer, and just a really good time. So I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say on this program tonight. But a couple of things that I heard this week, and then we'll get started. I heard from Dixie Republic that a couple moved from Vermont down to South Carolina and immediately went to the store because they had heard it on this program. So that is the kind of feedback that is just so cool to me, that you hear something on this program, and then when you get to that part of the country where you get a chance to, and we know people all the way down in Brazil who have visited Dixie Republic in the past, having heard it on this program. So listen, folks, we're trying to build a community here, and we appreciate the folks who pay attention to what we have to say, and I was just so tickled to hear that people from the Northeast, down in South Carolina.
You need to at the very least have a vacation home there. You go down there often enough.
Yeah, they let me sleep in the dressing room there, so that's I guess that's it. No, but also this. How about this? This is actually what I was reading when I blew the intro there just a moment ago. So this is a piece of correspondence that was mailed from Egypt. Egypt, Keith.
Okay.
Dear James Edwards and Keith Alexander of TPC, I want to send you this booklet that I purchased. It is of the Christian Church of St. Sergius that I visited in Cairo. Legend has it that Jesus Christ lived at this location where St. Sergius Church was eventually built. He, along with his mother, fled from Herod and resided here for 3 months. when Jesus was very young. It is the oldest church in Egypt. I was blessed to have visited it and was able to take pictures, and he sent a booklet that he bought in the gift shop there at this church in Egypt along with the pictures. I got them over there in the on the desk over there, so I'll show it to you during the break. So I just, you know, I don't know if I read that in the Bible, but I wouldn't discount it. I mean, he had to live somewhere, right? So,
yep, and he did go to Egypt, I believe.
Yeah, so there you go. So very well could have been, and no matter what, it's a very cool legend, and if it's true,
well,
it's
I think this
may
be a first. I didn't know we had followers in Egypt, well, but I'm glad to hear it.
We have got them everywhere, and we're thankful for that. So thank you. Yes, I mean, when I saw that a piece of mail, that definitely is one that you don't see every day. So that's what's coming up tonight. That's what's come in the mail, and looking forward to all of it. So, Keith, you and I, just very quickly, I don't want to get into this too heavily, but we'll talk. We were talking about Laura Loomer's near miss for her congressional seat, and everybody, there's been a kind of a split decision on how people in our ranks feel about Loomer, but the fact of the matter is, if she had won her Republican primary, whoever wins that Republican primary, that is the de facto election. They sail in. The Democrats don't really compete in that particular district in Central Florida, and we were talking about it at supper time tonight. What'd you say?
Well, Laura Loomer isn't our perfect candidate, but on the other hand, she's much closer to perfection than her opponent, and she is very much aware that election integrity is under attack. I think a lot of Republicans are whistling past the graveyard. You hear all these mainstream types telling you about the red waves coming, and, you know, get ready for it. Well, I'm afraid we're going to see a blue wave, and the left will say it's all because of the Dobbs decision reversing Roe versus Wade, but it won't be. We need to be very, very concerned, and the governors, the Republican governors of states, need to be very concerned about assuring the integrity of these coming elections. So far, the only governor that's really taking serious measures to see that that happens is Ron DeSantis of Florida. You know, the left, I don't put anything past him. I think Laura Loomer suspects that she may have been the victim of some election fraud or shenanigans. And I hope that she, if she really feels that way, that she will file some type of contest of the election, because we can't let these things go unchallenged, because the left is learning that all the dirty tricks that they learned under the Voting Rights Act are, you know, now being able to be beyond just trying to harvest ballots. They can actually manufacture ballots and get them counted. That's what they did in 2020. And I'm afraid that if we allow them to do this, all these conservatives, for example, that are jumping up and down about the Dobbs decision reversing Roe versus Wade, if we let them steal this election, that's going to be a short-lived celebration, because they're going to come right back and pass a nationwide law authorizing abortion. So we've really got to be on our toes about this. Mike Lindell, say what you will about him, he seems to be totally focused on election integrity, and that's a good thing, because election integrity is not a very sexy subject, going in there and counting ballots and stuff, but that's what we've got to do, or else, you know, we're going to have the whole nation pulled out from under us.
Is Laura Loomer the gold standard? I mean, no, absolutely not. Would she vote with Marjorie Taylor Greene on almost every issue? Would she vote better than most? Yes, she would. And I know Peter Brimelow had put up a graph that showed the vote tallies as they were coming in, starting immediately after 7 o'clock Eastern time, all the way up to 10. She had a little bit of a lead. It was neck and neck all the way through until about the last 20 minutes, and her opponent spiked up like a rocket. Where have we seen that before? This was a Republican primary.
Mail-in ballots.
Anyway, enough of that. That's what happened. We'll be back.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
So another little piece of correspondence that came in, this one via email, and I responded to the sender and said that we would address it on the air. So that's what we're going to do. Hello there. I'd like to have this addressed. As a white man, our listener writes, who cares about my own group, I still see many problems within my own group that needs to be fixed either through force or expulsion from the group. For example, what is to be done with degenerate whites who have gone off the deep end? Not only do we have self-loathing, purple-haired whites who would be proud of white extinguishment, but we also see whites who would shoot their fellow white neighbor for a box of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Additionally, there is simply no pride these days in keeping one's heritage clean of filthy ink or skin clean of filthy ink or saying no to fast food because of the obesity epidemic. The list of examples could go on and on. I have seen some whites who would qualify as borderline retarded from a mental perspective, and it is in these whites who are outbreeding decent whites, in other words, whites with good character, possessing self-respect, self-control, and self-discipline in droves. What is to be done within our own camp, and how is it to be sorted out? This is a challenge on top of the already many challenges we face as a people. However, it does seem to be the number one priority must be to not go extinct, but other challenges must not be ignored. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you. Well, you know, this is something that I talk about a lot, Keith, and I want you to take a stab at this too, because that is a very good email and some very legitimate concerns. And I have said very often that the people that I have a biggest gripe with, the people that I have more disdain for than anyone else by far, are the kind of whites that he mentioned, or at least that he alludes to. And I'm talking about not just the go-along-to-get-along whites, the people who parrot what is socially acceptable because it's the easiest thing to do. I've addressed this many times as well. When our hands are the ones that are placed on the levers of power, and that's the path you need to go to get a job or to be acceptable in polite society, and it's the path of least resistance, then the vast majority of whites are just going to fall back in line with this just as easily as they did for the other side. However, I think what he may be talking about here are the whites that are absolutely irredeemable. And those are the ones that have ingested so much of the poison that they are actively out there in the streets working against their own self-interests, working against the self-interests of their children and of our collective. Now, that is different than the white who doesn't really do anything and just goes along and floats along with the tide. For whatever good those people are, I do think that they will, again, fall back in line with us if and when the time comes when we take control again. However, for these others that are actively out there in the streets marching with the other against our people, I think they have to be the first to go. And no, I don't mean the first to go in a murderous type of way, but I don't think that they can be welcomed back into the fold. I think that they need to, they've made their bed, they need to be able to lie in it, and I don't want to have any reconciliation with people like that. The ones that are out, you know, I have said before, half in jest and half serious, I have had more problems out of white Christians than I have had of any black or Jew that I've ever known. And we've had plenty of problems with them.
Well, I really don't know where to draw the line between the go-along, get-along faction and the real adamant crazies. I have the feeling that the real adamant, crazy, anti-white whites are very few in number, but they get a lot of media play and action. On the other hand, I think there's also an awful lot of institutions that are riddled through with political correctness, and people have to pretend to go along because they work for organizations that are the only places where you get the jobs. For example, I remember that we had an engineer in Arkansas that came out for us, and he was doxxed, and he was fired from his job, and he wound up committing suicide. Why? Because the type of job he had, you had to have a government job to have it, or you had to work for like a big organization like General Dynamics or Boeing or something to have that type of job, and you have to act like you're going along with them. But then on the other hand, I remember the good old days. I'm old enough to remember that in the late 50s, early 60s, you were a segregationist if you were a white person living in Birmingham or Memphis or Nashville or Little Rock or something back then. That was the prevailing zeitgeist of the age. I think that a lot of whites have been gaslighted, particularly younger people, millennials and Gen Xers and people like this. They have been told lies that we know are lies, but they keep being pounded into our head. The mainstream does not tell you both sides of the story, and they find out that there's great punishment to be suffered if you don't believe that narrative, and some people have gotten great rewards by going along with it. Most people don't. For example, the normal Antifa person, I don't think, is getting rich by being rabidly anti-white. But we need to see that Marshall McLuhan was right. The medium is the message. If you control the airwaves, if you control the media, you will control probably the opinions of at least 7 out of 10 and maybe 8 out of 10 people, 4 out of 5. So, see, we've got to do something about that. And the best thing that's ever happened to our movement is the Internet. I remember back in the 80s and the 70s, it was bleak out there, folks. I mean, we had a few publications like the Citizen Informer with the Council of Conservative Citizens. But basically, I think it was Mark Twain that said, never get into an argument with somebody that buys ink by the barrel. Well, they were buying ink by the barrel, and we were buying it by the thimble back in those days. Now we do have the Internet. Our opinions and our viewpoints are getting a lot more play. You were talking about somebody from Vermont moving down to Traveler's Rest in South Carolina. Now, where would a person like that get our opinions that they could weigh in their mind and find them attractive if it were not through the Internet, basically? You know, this is what we need to understand, that there are a lot of people being gaslighted out there. What is gaslighting? Gaslighting, comes from a movie with Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer that was back in the 40s.
Hang on now, you're leaving out one that was in that we love quite dearly.
Who is that?
Wasn't that Angela Lansbury in that?
Yeah, she was absolutely in it, yeah. She played the maid. That was her first big role, and she played a little London tart kind of person, and she is just a great actress. But anyway, that movie, Charles Boyer is telling Ingrid Bergman that she is forgetting things, that she's doing things wrong, and that and he basically drives her crazy. Well, that's what's happened to a lot of white people. the media is convincing them that they are crazy to have the instincts that they normally have of self-preservation and liking their own kind, birds of a feather flocking together. And they've gotten these people to repudiate it because, look, let's face it, there are great punishments and great disadvantages to be suffered if you don't go along with the media narrative. And we've got to reach out to these people. And like you said, if the worm turns and we get in control, we're going to find a whole new crop of conservatives out there that we didn't even suspect existed. So many people are just interested in their little lives. They're not interested in bigger things, what's happening, what's going to happen 50 years from now regarding the white race. They're interested in my next paycheck, whether I can afford my jet ski, whether I can do this, that, and the other, whether I can make the house note. That's the type of stuff that is really being brought into focus by the Biden administration's overexpending. Even Powell, I think, the person that's in charge of the Fed, is on the verge of criticizing him, saying that, you know, as long as he keeps spending money like this, I've got no choice but to raise interest rates. Because, you know, even when you get the Jewish-run Fed beginning to buck on the expenditures of the Biden administration, you know, this is, you know, we're going into uncharted territory here. You know, there are so many people that realize that you can't, you know, I forget who it was that said, if something can't go on forever, it won't. And this expending of money by the government under the Biden administration is wild. And I think that it's affecting people's pocketbook issues. So I think that we're really coming to a point where there are a lot of newly discovered and newly minted people that are sympathetic to our views. And, you know, we just need to make sure that no crazy people go off the deep end and do something like Dylann Roof. You know, we would probably still have a lot of these Confederate monuments still up if it hadn't been for Dylann Roof. That's where all the anti-Confederate animus came from.
Well, they used that as the excuse. They used that as the
fuel.
They
were waiting for it.
They were waiting for it. They needed a spark. All right, listen, I actually want to say a few more things while we're on this topic before we shift gears again. And we're really so much more to get to tonight. But I was thinking as Keith was talking about something I'd read earlier this week, and I'll tell you what dots I connected as soon as we come back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Once again, March for Our Lives gathered at the steps of the Texas State Capitol in Austin, demanding action in the wake of the school shooting in Uvalde. They're calling for Governor Greg Abbott to call a special session of the legislature to raise the minimum age to purchase an AR-15 to 21. Abbott has resisted the calls for tougher gun laws, instead saying that mental health care issues need to be the focus. The Uvalde School's police chief, Pete Arredondo, was sacked on Wednesday over the botched law enforcement response to the shooting at Robb Elementary School. There's concern about the potential for a radiation leak at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine. Residents near the plant are being given iodine tablets in case there is a radiation exposure, but experts say that the actual situation isn't as bad as it's being portrayed by both sides. This is USA Radio News.
Make money doing what you love. It can be done. Matter of fact, it has been done. Consider the story of Jack London. He's one of the highest paid writers of all time. Authored The Call of the Wild, recently released as a blockbuster movie starring Harrison Ford. Jack grew up in a rough neighborhood in Oakland, poor, uneducated, and a school dropout. As a child, Jack fell in love with the idea of being a writer. The notion that an uneducated, dirt-poor school dropout from Oakland could someday be a published writer was insanity. You know the rest of the story, though. Jack London became one of the richest writers of all time. Discover Jack's secret that allows anyone of any income or educational level to make money doing what they love. Whatever it is you love more than anything else, let's make that your prosperous living. Go right now to discoveringjack.com. That's discoveringjack.com. His secret is free. Just go to discoveringjack.com. Discoveringjack.com.
Conservatives are dismissing the information revealed in the search affidavit of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. The heavily blacked-out document was released Friday in response to a request from several media organizations. Trump's National Intelligence Director John Ratcliffe telling CBS News that he didn't see anything that justified the search warrant.
The unsealing of this today isn't going to do much to, again, tamp down the chaos, the confusion.
The 28-page document was used to convince a judge to sign the search warrant on Trump's Florida home. The newly unsealed court records also shows that the Justice Department repeatedly informed Trump's lawyers that Mar-a-Lago was not authorized to store classified information, a point that was reiterated to Trump's counsel as recently as June. Diplomats from across the globe have failed to reach an agreement on the United Nations treaty that is designed to protect marine life. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Right. Welcome back. I said something in the last segment, and as I was thinking more about it, and as I was listening to Keith, it reminded me of an article that I had read earlier this week. And what I said a moment ago was that I had had more personal problems from white Christians than Jews or any of the other people who are arrayed in a constellation against us. And God knows, I mean, listen, if you count articles written in the New York Times or the Washington Post or any of these other countless publications and programs that have condemned us over the years, then yes, I guess you could say we've had more trouble out of them. But I don't count that as trouble. I don't even, that doesn't bother me at all. And to be fair and to be completely frank, I have had very little problems in any aspect of my life. I've never had a problem with my wife, or my family, my parents, my cousins, my brother, my kids. I know they're still young, but
roof doesn't leak.
Of all of my close circle of friends, everybody is either completely supportive or at the very least ambivalent at worst. So I have not had a problem with my work. I know a lot of people have. A lot of people have lost relationships, and that's a price you pay. But I have not had that problem. But what problems I have had personally, and I don't count being condemned by Congress or the media or any of these, anything like that, to be a personal problem, has come from white Christians. And on the very rare occasion where it has ended up at my doorstep or in my home, and I think, you know, one of the prime examples, of course, was the problem that we had with Southern Baptist, the Southern Baptist Church coming after my pastor. I mean, these are white Christians that did that, and that was something that, to the extent that I could have been wounded. I was wounded through him having to go through that.
Look, be honest so, now. It was rough it. On you for your pastor to have to endure that by defending you. Of course, it was
and
wonderful.
I asked him, and we've told that story many times, and I asked him not to do that, and he made the decision, and of course, that endeared him to me even more. The sacrifice for a brother is something that I would always offer to a brother, but it's something that I don't necessarily expect back. But when a man does do that, he separates himself from the vast majority out there.
Well, he shows
no
that he's a
it.
Proper pastor.
Well, all of that. So that was one example. Maybe there's been another two or three. But in those examples like that, okay, it's white Christians who are so filled with self-hate and self-loathing and fear. I think that is an animating factor. It's the fear that they have of running afoul of the people who hate them that causes them to act out this way. They're going to virtue signal, hey, we went after that James Edwards guy. We're one of the good guys, you see. Mr. Jewish guy, you could pat me on the head now. Or Mr. Black man, you see. I hate white people. I hate myself.
See, most of these people are living paycheck to paycheck. That's what's so unfortunate. And any disruption in their flow of income terrorizes them.
And that's so, you know, hey, I hate myself. This guy, he's proud to be white. I'm not like him. So now can you accept me into your coalition? Well, this is something that Ron DeSantis hit on this week. And I read this in a publication called Christian Headlines. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis urged supporters over the weekend to put on the full armor of God in the continued battle against the political left. You have to be ready for battle, so put on the full armor of God. Take a stand against the left's schemes. Stand firm with the belt of truth buckled around your waist. You will face fire from flaming arrows, but the shield of faith will protect you, DeSantis told attendees at a gathering in Hollywood, Florida. Also, DeSantis said, and I quote, "We need people all over the country to be willing to put on that full armor of God to stand firm against the left. I can tell you this, in Florida, we will be standing our ground. We will be holding that line. We are not going to back down." To that, Brad Griffin, our friend over at Occidental Dissent, said, "Hey, yes, why are Christians, particularly white Christians, evangelical Protestants, not Christian Zionists, but these people who claim to share our faith and our background, why are, if they have a personal relationship with Christ, why do they fear being judged by journalists? That is an excellent question that is entirely germane to our previous segment. Why are you afraid of these people attacking you with their little made-up isms and phobias, especially to the extent that not only would you cower, but you would actively attack the people who are courageous?"
I've got an answer for you, James. Here's what it is. Have you noticed that so many of the most popular preachers on television or on the radio are basically into the prosperity gospel? A lot of people want Christianity to be an adjunct to helping them prosper financially and otherwise in the eyes of the world. And telling people that they may have to stand up and accept persecution for their faith, that just doesn't go over well with a lot of people. But you know what? That's how you separate the sheep from the goats. That's how you separate the true Christians from the people that just basically want to tag along and think that this is the way to get a trouble-free life. It is not a trouble-free life. God told us that. He said that, if you follow me, that will set you against your brother, your father, your mother, whatnot. This is a hard lesson for people to learn, but we've got to stand up, because if we don't, succeeding generations are going to curse us for selling them down the river and not standing up when the battle was at least at issue and we possibly could have won.
I think there is something to the mindset of a coward having a visceral hatred for somebody who is courageous, someone who is something that they can never be. And this is another thing, and I'm quoting straight from Brad here, quit worrying about these journalists and their lies. You're a good person. They are liars. Are they going to go to hell at the end of the day? How can these people who are going to hell and have all sorts of evil beliefs shame you? But unfortunately, so many whites and so many white Christians have allowed this to be the case. Why are you worried about them attacking you? Why do you care about the opinions of Jews and of atheists? And Brad wrote something that, of course, we've always agreed with. We don't care what these people think.
They're wrong. Reprobates.
They're wrong. And let's not forget, they are terrible people. So we don't care about that. Unfortunately, too many of our people do, and we have to get past that. We have to get past that because—and you can't—you know how you get past that? If you quit looking at yourself as an individual. If you look at yourself as part of a collective, you owe something to the group. You owe something to the past. You owe something to your progeny. You owe something to your ancestors and to your own descendants.
Well, as Davy Crockett said, "I leave these words for others when I'm dead. Be all sure you're right, then go ahead." If you're right— if it's righteous, for example, to have a sense of racial solidarity with your own race, and apparently it must be because Jews, blacks, Muslims, everybody except white Gentiles seems to be able to do that without feelings of guilt, then you can stand tall. You need to understand that the people, just take a look at the people that criticize you and look at them. Look at them hard and say, do I really want to be like these people? Do I really want to ingratiate those people? Are those the type of people I'd like to invite over to my house for a cookout? I don't think so. We need to be able, look, it's America is splitting into us and them, and it's not our fault. It's the left that's doing this. The left has decided that rather than allow somebody like Donald Trump to be elected president and go hog wild and pig crazy, they're going to stamp out and censor anyone with a different opinion. And they're going to punish them. You know, what do you think the things like 87,000 new IRS agents is about that are going to be trained in the use of firearms? Look, we need to understand that we're in a culture war, whether we like it or not. And we're going to have to stand up. Be like James. I remember when James was put on the SPLC hate list, he was celebrating.
I told that story again not long ago. I think it must have been at the... gathering in Selma that we were at a few weeks back. So that's all.
Well, look, the truth. Look, I was here at the time, and I know James didn't cower a bit. In fact, he welcomed it.
Well, even NBC got me on record with that little quote saying I was ecstatic to be on the list of maintained by a bunch of communists and civil rights hustlers.
Well, it kind of puts you in the who's who of righteous folk. You know, we're going to be separated into the sheep and the goats. Let's be sheep, folks. That's what God wants.
Or do we want to be rams?
Well, we're getting rammed by the goats.
I was queuing up a clip that a listener in Missouri has sent in to us. That'll be the focal point of our next segment. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, always a fan favorite, one of the TPC top five guys in terms of appearances log, Sam Dixon, waiting in the wings. He'll be up with us next, and he told us.
He's in the on-deck circle swinging the weighted bat.
And then El Nino, Jose Nino himself, will be blowing through here.
Not the weather event, but something else.
He'll be here in the third hour, and then still much more to come. But I want you to be thinking about this. Now, Keith, you know the answer. So we had our Charlottesville show, the five-year anniversary of Charlottesville, a couple of weeks ago. Great show, I thought, anchored by Jason Kessler, the organizer of the Unite the Right rally in August of 2017 himself, along with Michael Hill of the League of the South. Also, Michael was going to be a speaker that day until the events unfolded as they did. Rich Hamblin, Eddie Miller were there and were on that particular broadcast. But Sam said all of us, to a man, left out the single most important thing that had. Don't tell him what it is.
I'm not going to tell him, but see, with Sam, this is something that takes, you know, front and center with him because he was involved in it.
Got to take a break. But what was it that we all left out? The single most important thing that ought to be included in any discussion of Charlottesville, according to Sam Dixon. I invited him back on to tell us, and he will tell us in the second hour.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Welcome back, everybody. So we've got this clip. Oh, first I should say, with regards to the talk of Christians and non-Christians and who causes more problems, Janice, our dear friend Janice, who's always a mainstay during our Valentine's Day Ladies' Nights programs, and she is, of course, the wife of our good friend Rich, who was on that aforementioned Charlottesville show just a couple of weeks ago. She said, we need to bring out that most Christians don't read their Bibles or actually study it for themselves. And that's right. I got a big problem with Christians. But that's okay. We can get them whipped back into shape, I think, I hope. But I don't know if I read this before, but it's going to dovetail in quite nicely to the clip we're about to play. And I think it'll really tie into the whole theme of this hour before we get to our two guests tonight. And this came from a listener in Arizona, and he wrote a few weeks back, "Your radio program continues to make history, both in terms of longevity and in riveting content. As you point out, a majority of white Republicans are waking up to the reality of the Great Replacement, and you deserve credit for your role in broadcasting the truth all of these years. I've said it before, but it's worth repeating. You describe the existential threats with clarity, passion, and optimism, but without hatred or bitterness." Now, Keith, those are the kinds of comments that you earn. They are not given, and it means the entire world to receive feedback such as that. But I will say this before we play this clip. 2 decades now on the air, just shy of it, 18 years, unapologetically on that entire run, and counting, we're not going anywhere, as long as your support holds up. On behalf of a cause, we have endured a never-ending crucible of media condemnation, an incessant barrage of deplatforming and dirty tricks, you name it. But we welcome such trials because it steals us. A man needs to be tested. You cannot be a leader unless you have been tested like that. Now, in 2004, I can tell you with absolute certainty, there was only one broadcast entity that was welcoming to the airwaves high-quality guests like those you hear on this program. The system media would not touch any of them. They would not touch them at all. So when we started nobody else on the air, not only were they not interviewing the guests that you hear on a nightly basis on this program, but they weren't even coming close to echoing the message that we were saying as your hosts. But now there are many who do, but we welcome that too because it solidifies us.
But we've been like old man river. We just keep rolling along. We've been doing the same thing since 2004, and we're not about to quit.
And people are catching up now, including this guy who you may hear on Fox News. So this is a clip from the Tucker Carlson Show just a few days ago that was sent to us from a listener in Missouri who's been tuned in since year one. This guy has been tuned in. Him and his family and their kids have been listeners since 2004. Let's see if we can play this. I'm going to have to turn it up. This is a goofy file. Here we go.
Speaking of change, all of a sudden out of nowhere, it is acceptable in the media to engage in overt race hatred. Here's the most latest example. Journalists are celebrating a book called The Last White Man. It's a fictional account, but effectively it celebrates the elimination of an entire race, which used to be called genocide, and we were always against that, but not anymore. The author of the book, Mushen Hamid, said it would be, quote, the beginning of something great if an entire race disappears. Wired Magazine agrees. They called the book, quote, a glimpse of a future without white people, and of course they're celebrating this. When did we all get behind the idea of genocide being a good thing? Oh, shut up, don't notice. But it's hard not to notice because they're saying it out loud. What should we think of this? Pedro Gonzalez is associate editor at Chronicles. He joins us tonight. Pedro, this seems like kind of a sea change. You didn't used to be allowed to say, I hate an entire race of people and hope for their extinction. Wired Magazine wouldn't kind of have your back on that, right? But now they do. What is this?
Right. Well, it's a new phenomenon that goes just beyond books, but I think it's important to actually do an overview of The Last White Man. Basically, the characters suffer through these apocalyptic changes as violence escalates as whites disappear. Pale-skinned militants in woodland camo stalk the streets, attacking people with impunity from the cops. But a calm settles upon the world once whites disappear from its face forever. A book like this, which is somewhere between racial exterminationist literature with a kind of wistful touch and liberal pornography, could only be written about one group, and that privilege is reserved for whites. There's a whole industry for this stuff, Tucker, and there are no shortage of eager consumers who eat this stuff up because they believe truly that there's no limit to the amount of demeaning that we can inflict on whites. And again, it goes beyond bad books like The Last White Man. And I'll give you a different but related example of this phenomenon. The Minneapolis Public Schools and local teachers union have recently instituted a new policy in which, when it comes to downsizing and layoffs, the rule is white teachers must be laid off before any teacher of color. In other words, they've codified racial discrimination against whites in real life, not in fiction. In an age where we talk a whole lot about discrimination and hate speech, we've actually formally instituted it in the United States against the group who we blame for this stuff, and that is obviously white people.
Yeah, it can't. I mean, that's, you know, racism doesn't ever end well, and at this scale, it'll end very badly. And I hope they stop it immediately.
Okay. So here's the thing. I love hearing stuff like that. That is a very good thing for our cause. And at the end of the day, our cause is what we're here to champion. But I will tell you, 18 years ago, nobody was saying that on the air. You know, people forget Tucker Carlson. And I do think that Tucker Carlson is sincere. And I think people can come along. But back in 2004, Tucker Carlson was on CNN wearing bow ties, if anybody remembers those days. And there was no people on social media doing that, and there was no Pedro Gonzalez, and all of these people, even people like Charlie Kirk, who 3 or 4 years ago were kicking people out of his events for saying things like that. Now Charlie Kirk himself is saying things like that. So people are coming along, and in order for them to come along, there had to be the people out there who were taking all the arrows and were taking all the beatings, so that any time the enemy spins his ordnance, it becomes a little more safer for other people to stick their necks out. I think, let me just put it that way. And so, obviously, the guests, and by, of course, it's not just us. I mean, certainly in media, in broadcast media, there was nobody else in 2004. Now, a lot of people are doing it. There have been people doing it much longer than us, like Sam Dixon, who's going to be coming on in a minute. I mean, he's been doing it decades longer than we have and that I have. And so there's a lot of people out there that have been doing it for a long, long time, and they are the ones who have made these people feel more comfortable in doing it. The more people you see doing it, it creates a certain synergy and a certain momentum. And so I welcome the fact now that all of these Trump voters are seeing it our way, that there are a proliferation of content creators online throughout multiple platforms, all the way up to the Tucker Carlson show, that are saying these things. But...
Well, the big question, James, I think, is this. We now know that our enemies have dropped the mask. They are showing exactly what they want. Their end game is white genocide. In other words, all of us white folks dead. They will say, oh, we don't intend to kill you. We just intend for you to breed out with non-whites. Well, they can say whatever they want to, but it's a very unfriendly approach. It's something that would not be tolerated if it were directed at any other racial group. So we need to tell people what they can do to counter this. How can they punish people, for example, that publish books like this, that give cover to people like that author? And I think that the way you do that is you've got to boycott, you've got to have your own BDS movement against the left, against the colleges and universities, against the media, against corporate America that is supporting this type of stuff, either explicitly or even implicitly. Let's do it. What we'll also be doing is supporting a lot of mom and pop businesses rather than going to Amazon or going to some big organization that has a lot of money and basically uses it against you, somebody like T-Mobile or Verizon, people like that. What we need to do is we need to be searching out alternatives that support us and support them. We'll also be frustrating the left's efforts to drive small white businesses out of business. And we need to do this. This is another way. We've got to have a split. We need a national divorce. We need a national divorce not only in terms of politics, we need it in terms of culture and even economics.
And it's getting there. It's getting there. We've talked about it. And even you have Fox News, you know, the most popular cable news host in the world, calling out the ADL and mocking the ADL. Now, that's how far things have come in recent years. And for that to have happened, you had to have people with courage. Courage is contagious, and our people need stable and steady leadership. I think that's something this program has always provided. And for as long as we can continue, we will always strive to represent our shared cause with professionalism and effectiveness.
And we will always call a spade a dirty shovel, as my wife's late grandfather used to say, my late wife's late grandfather. That's what we'll do. We're not going to pull any punches here at the Political
Cesspool. And we're going to continue to deliver a high-quality broadcast, working in cooperation with our wonderful listeners, the very best listening audience in the entire world, to popularize our positions even more. Because at the end of the day, and we talk about this all the time, Keith, we've always said this, we never know who's listening to us and who's taking some of our ideas, and that's fine. I'm not worried about the credit or the attribution. Let's just get this job done for our people. And you never know who's listening to us as a little
it
dirty.
It is a matter of life and death, folks. It really
pleasure.
Is.
And taking it and spreading it. I can tell you, if it was just us and if it was just the people that we have on this program, as good of the work as they have done is, you don't have tens of millions of white Republicans now thinking like us. It's taken all of us and then others as well. But I will say this.
Like faith is like a mustard seed, as it says in the Bible, right?
I would kindly ask you, though, ladies and gentlemen, to continue to support the original voice of pro-white broadcast media, and that's us. And the third quarter fundraising letter will be mailed out this week. I'm not going to tell you what the incentive is yet. We'll talk about that next week. But between now and then, you'll get this letter in the mail. And I'd love to hear back from you. We have promises to keep in mind.
I wonder
to go.
What this box was that glows in the dark.
That's it. Well, I tell you, it's a lot of paper cuts. It was my wife and I, my cousin, my brother, and our little daughter, Caroline. She's almost two. She was shuttling letters back and forth for them to be labeled and stamped and sealed, and each person had their own job.
Violating child labor laws.
Everybody had their own job, and she was shuttling. It was a true family affair yesterday. These letters are going out. Do read them if you get one in the mailbox this week, and if you're a donor to the show, you will. And we'll talk more about that next week. Third quarter fundraising drive coming up in September. We'll be back with Sam Dixon next.